Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Golf Talk Live. I'm your host, Ted Odorico, and, of course, we got the coach's corner back this evening. Had a little break here the last few weeks. I was away on holiday, and some other things come up, and just didn't have a chance to get a panel together. But we got some great guys back here tonight, all of which have been on the program a number of times, so I'm very thankful to have these guys back, and I'll introduce them here in just a second. But just to remind everybody, of course, we're live on Thursday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. Central Time. That's 7 to 9 for you guys and gals on the East Coast, and I believe that is 4 to 6 for you on the West Coast. Don't quote me on that, but I think it is. Thanks for tuning in tonight, and if you're unsure and if you're listening here, obviously you found your way here, but for those of you that want a little bit of insight on how to find the program, you go to blogtalkradio.com. And you can either type the full name out, blogtalkradio.com/golftalklive, or you can just type in Golf Talk Live up in the search key, and that'll get you right there. Or you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. I always got the links up there, so very easy to find us. And we're grateful that you're joining us here every Thursday. Also, if you want to speak to myself or any of the guests during the live broadcast, again, which is Thursday nights from 6 to 8 p.m. Central, you can do so by calling area code 646-716-4667, or you can certainly email questions and comments to me personally at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. So if you have any comments about the show, or if you're in the golf industry yourself and maybe you feel you have something to bring to either the Coach's Corner panel or just something to bring to the audience and you want to maybe appear on the show, you can also email me there at ted.golftalklive@gmail.com. As I mentioned, I'm on Facebook, both personally and for the show. You can get updates for the show on social media. facebook.com/golftalklive blog. Make sure you have the blog on the end there. Or you can follow me, Ted, and my last name is spelled O-D-O-R-I-C-O. Always glad to make new connections and friends on Facebook. Within reason, obviously. I'm not looking to hook up with anybody, so if you're going to do that, go to one of the other lovely sites out there besides Facebook. Get a little tired of receiving those ones. But anyways, also, you can follow me on Twitter at Ted and Buck CEO. That's CEO on Taps. Thank you for all the new followers on Twitter, and I always keep the program updated on there as well. And don't forget to check out the website at www.golftalkliveblog.com. Okay, as I mentioned, I've got a great panel tonight, and later in the broadcast, don't forget, I'm going to be interviewing Sean Kelly. He's the owner-director of Linked Golfers, the number one group on LinkedIn. And we'll be talking to him a little bit later in the program. But right now, I got three gentlemen waiting here in the wings. Mr. Lloyd Higley from Chicago, and he's a teacher professional up at Chicagoland Golf Academy. And if you want to learn a little bit more about Lloyd, you can visit his website at chicagolandgolfacademy.com. Also joining the panel tonight is Bob Foreman. He's a certified golf figure out in the North Carolina area. And you can check out him on his website at golffitcarolina.com. And I'll read those out a little bit later as well in the program. And last but not least, rounding out the panel from up in Detroit, Detroit area, is Scott Millman. He's a master teacher, and he's also the owner and president of the Simple World of Golf and also co-owner and founder at the Millman Energy Foundation. Great foundation, definitely want to get involved. And his websites, of course, the simpleworldofgolf.com, and for his foundation, it's norestrictionsgolf.org. Gentlemen, welcome to Coach's Corner.
Hey, Ted.
Thanks, Ted.
All right. Thanks, guys, for coming on. I know it's you guys are all busy, and as we all are in this business, and I appreciate you guys giving time to the audience again. And always glad to have you guys on. Always a lot of fun, and I enjoy all of you on the panel. So we're going to do things a little bit differently tonight, guys. But first, let's just pick up on a conversation that we were starting. I dropped, of course, the PGA Championship coming up. I want to get your thoughts very quickly on any predictions. So we'll start with, of course, in order. Lloyd, any thoughts who you think might take the championship this year?
J.B. Holmes.
Yeah?
Any
particular?
Yeah. Local boy, loves the course, seems to be hitting the ball good, seems to be healthy, and I like him. I think that, being a local boy, that's my pick.
Sounds good. Bob, how about you? Anything, anyone in particular?
Well, Rory is hot, and after the double bogey, starting out the back nine, he birdied five of the last seven coming in. But I'm going to go with Jim Furyk because I think he's been playing well too.
Yeah, Jim Furyk's a good choice for sure. Scott, what about yourself?
Well, only because he's off to a fantastic start. I like Lee Westwood, believe it or not.
Yeah, he's a good player. And he always certainly when he's in a major and that, he's always usually plays very well and finishes up in the top area quite often. Doesn't get to play as much here of late, but good to see him in the mix. For me, I would like to see. Now I haven't really been paying attention here, unfortunately, but I'm gonna root for Phil. I'm gonna throw Phil in the hat just because I'd like to see. I know, just for something. surprise, eh?
Yeah.
I'd like to see Phil win.
The way he started out today, you thought he was gonna fall apart, but he pulled it together.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he's due, but we'll see what happens. But I'd like to see Phil. And I'll be honest, I also would like to have. I wouldn't be. I'm not sure. Is Tiger's in the field this week, right?
Yep.
He is.
Okay.
I didn't see what he – I know
and
he started off.
Because,
last time I looked, he was like plus three or something like that, but I didn't follow it at all today.
He finished it. I think he finished it plus three today.
Did he?
Yeah, did he? Yeah, so that's not one of his better opening rounds. But and again, a little bit selfish. Obviously I know he's won a lot of tournaments out there, but I think – he really needs to do. He needs to get another major under his belt, not because of following Nicklaus or anything of that nature, but just I think that's going to snap him out of his funk, and I think that's about the only way it's going to happen. He can win all the tournaments he wants, but until he gets another major and sort of gets over that hurdle, I think it's just going to keep going on as it has been the last couple of years. But that's my choices first and foremost. But I wouldn't be if Tiger managed to turn things around, but we'll see what happens as it progresses. Anyways, guys, I was mentioning off air, tonight we're going to do things on the Coach's Corner panel just a little bit differently. Normally we have a group of email questions and through that way, but we're going to tackle one, and what we're going to do is I've put together some information on tonight's topic, of course, is Methji. And I've put together five mental keys to make your next round one of your best. And this came in really from Bobby in San Jose, California. And he starts off his email this way. He says, I play pretty regularly and consider myself a pretty good player, but a 7 handicap, so he's obviously a pretty decent player. And he said, I'd like to hear more on the mental side of the game. He said, I would be certainly interested in hearing the panel's view on how to prepare mentally for a round, et cetera, and I think it would make for some great panel discussion. And his question, obviously, is do you think you could do that in a future episode? Well, Bobby, we're going to do that for you tonight. So, guys, let's jump right into it. And as I said, we're five mental keys to make your next round one of your best. And first and foremost, I think before we start a round, one of the things that you need to do as part of the preparation is you need to make sure that you eat, drink, and be well prepared. So that doesn't mean to go out and tie one on or knock back a few beers. We're talking about getting prepared in the morning. Certainly don't underestimate the importance of eating and drinking before and during a round. Not doing so is certainly going to affect the mental side of your performance. Make sure that you keep it light. Maybe eat an hour to 2 hours before playing, and avoid, of course, the old clubhouse fried breakfast before heading out. Bob, I want to start with you. I know your expertise, of course, is fitness. Why is it important to make sure that you have a good breakfast to start out before you play around?
Well, I mean, you know, you are what you eat, and if you do, like you said, if you eat kind of a heavy fat-laden type meal the 1 or 2 hours before you go out and play golf or do any type of physical activity, what's going to happen once you start that activity is the blood is going to be shunted from the stomach where it has gone to help digest that food to your muscles that are being activated. And so if, you know, you're eating a high-fat type meal, basically that food's just going to sit there in your stomach and it's going to kind of make you sluggish and, you know, not at your peak for participating in the activity that you're participating in. So, you know, you're better off going with something complex carbohydrate, you know, something whole grain, fruits, vegetables, that will get ingested more quicker into the bloodstream. So those, you know, those that glucose and those nutrients would be more readily available for you while you're out there, you know, being physically active.
Right, right. But well said. And the reason why I wanted to really address some of this is, and you know, and there might be listeners out there and they're thinking to themselves, well, I'm not playing on tour or I'm not, you know, a scratch golfer and that. So why do I care? What, you know, what's the big deal whether I have, you know, a big heavy breakfast before? Well, the truth of the matter is, guys, is that people want to become better golfers, whatever level they may be at. And you really have one of two choices. In order to be, there's a lot of different things that components, and we're going to be getting into that in future programs, but a lot of components into becoming a better player. And one of them, of course, is, as you mentioned there, Bob, is you are what you eat. And if you're eating a lot of junk food or high sugary snacks and things all the time, either before or during the round, it's going to affect your metabolism and it's going to affect your insides, if you will, and quite often leave you sluggish throughout the round, and you're not going to be able to play your best golf. So, Lloyd, I want to jump to you real quickly here for a second. You know, obviously we see a lot of – I know you've worked with a lot of students over – what do you try to do to encourage them? I mean, obviously you can't force it down their throat, but to encourage some of the people that you work with to make sure that they're eating a little bit healthier before going out. What are some things that you try to do?
Well, exactly what Bob said is that I try to at least give them a checklist of what you could eat before a round, what you should eat during a round. Stay away from the hot dog, the brat halfway through. Grab an apple, grab a banana, grab some juice instead of a pop, instead of a Coke. To me, and I'm not a nutritionist, and I'm just going by what I feel, what I see in myself, is that I like stuff that feels clean to me. Stuff that I feel like, you know, like an orange juice or an apple juice, something that I feel that goes through my system and it keeps me focused. And it's exactly what Bob said. I mean, you chow down on a big old hot dog and a big old bag of potato chips and you chug down a Coke. I don't care if it's a Coke, Diet Coke or whatever. 20 minutes later, I'm feeling like I just got done with a meal. I just feel sluggish. So I try to get them to, you know, to work on the yogurts and, you know, some juices, some fruits, grab some stuff like that. I lots of times when I go out with my students, I'll bring a Tupperware or a baggie full of grapes and strawberries and sliced up pieces of watermelon and things like that. And I'll just sit there and I'll just be munching on these things with a little granola every once in a while. And these kids love it. I just, you know, just keep feeding that to them. And all of a sudden they're not eating the hot dogs anymore. I like things that just make me feel clear. That's all I try to do.
Yeah, and it's so important. A lot of people, like I said, you know, might be scratching their head and again thinking, well, you know, what's the big deal if I have, you know, maybe a cup or two of coffee in the morning and so forth. And you know, if it's decaf, even though technically decaf isn't 100% decaffeinated, it's certainly better than the alternative. But certainly you don't want to be hopped up when you're going out there. And one of the biggest things I've seen, especially with some of the youngsters, they've all been bought into this energy drink, and you know, they're having a Monster drink or a Red Bull or something before they're going out and doing their activities. And, you know, that's a big mistake. Scott, I'm going to shift gears here just a little bit and give you something a little bit different so that we're not repetitive. One of the other components to the first mental key here is not just about eating and drinking, but also being well-prepared. And it talks about, you know, for a pre-round warm-up, try to spend at least, you know, 10 minutes on each of, you know, driving range, short game and putting and so forth, so maybe about a total of 30 minutes. Talk a little bit about that, Scott. Some of the things that you try to encourage your students when working with them in order to prepare for the round. What are some of the things that you talk about and help them sort of work out a practice routine before they go out and play?
You know, it's funny that you gave that question to me, because this morning on the morning drive, they were talking about Tiger and his routine, and specifically that he's self-contained, that he never steps foot in the clubhouse, that everything that he needs from his, you know, he drinks Pedialyte, which why I don't know why anybody would want to drink Pedialyte, because it's gross, but that goes without saying, that he is very regimented in his routine from the time that he leaves the car in the parking lot and hits the parking lot, he gets to the putting green, it's down to the minute, they chart the walk that he takes to get to the first tee, at what point he's going to smack, and they have that down to the exact minute. I think it brings up a great point that I think as my students go out, we kind of lay out a plan, even if it's to the point of, hey, you need to drink water on these specific holes. And when you get here, you need to take in, you know, X number of ounces of water or your Gatorade or whatever it is that they're drinking. And the same thing with snacks. I think having a plan, whether it's tournament conditions or you know, maybe not so much in your fun rounds, but specifically in tournament, we make sure that they have a laid out plan of, hey, I'm going to be at the golf course 45 minutes ahead of my tee time. I'm going to putt for 10 minutes. I'm going to, you know, hit balls maybe for a half hour. I might chip for 5 or 10 minutes. And have that all charted out and laid out so that they're comfortable and that they've actually practiced that routine prior to their tournament round. So we will actually go on a practice round and have them go through their routine. Some of my players, it's an hour and 20 minutes. Some of them, it's a half hour. So it just depends. But we make sure that we come up with a plan.
Yeah, and it's so important to do that. You know, this is something that I've tried to instill in you know, the students that I've worked with. And again, I've made no bones about this. I do a lot of corporate work with corporate types. They're a little bit older. I don't work a lot with juniors and things like that. Not that I have anything against that, but that's, you know, sort of my niche, if you will, is working with a lot of corporate clients. And, you know, one of the things I try to, you know, I see so many of them making some of the bad habits. Now, certainly things are getting better as more information is put out through the media. But, you know, over the years, I've watched a lot of them. By the time they hit hole number 9, they've had a couple of beers in them, and, you know, they're playing out in hot weather, and you can tell that they're getting a little sluggish. And, you know, I certainly don't want to take away from a fun experience, but at the same time, I hear a lot of the same grumbling when they come on, you know, for lessons and things. It's, you know, geez, I just can't seem to get my game together. And, you know, I'll sort of talk to them a little bit about what they do and preparation and so forth. And Scott, you raise a great point. You know, you need to prepare before playing. It's not just a matter of driving up in the parking lot and getting your clubs and putting them onto the back of the cart and waiting for your tee time. You need to have a plan. And you know, Tiger is a good example of that. And actually, you know, it talks about one of the things here that I put together was how his pre-round meal of choice has predominantly been an egg white omelet with some vegetables. You know, a small sandwich with fruit or would be another good option, but definitely don't have a big meal. And for as far as preparation, you certainly don't want to be, you know, getting into too technical or too much thought, if you will, before your round. It's really just a sort of a warm-up and preparation. So, you know, 20 to 30 minutes, depending on how much time you're going to allow yourself, but at least I would say 20 minutes. If you're showing up at the golf course 5 minutes, 10 minutes before your round, you might as well turn around and get in the car and go back home, because you're already setting yourself up for failure, in my opinion. Any other thoughts, guys, before we move on to the next one?
Yeah.
Go ahead. Was that
good.
Scott or?
Go ahead, Lloyd.
No. I was just going to say, no, I agree with you. Go ahead.
Well, and, you know, when you talk about the before your round, you know, unfortunately, a lot of folks will stop at the donut shop and pick up a couple of sugar donuts or glazed donuts. I mean, one of the worst things you can do before a round and during a round is to eat, you know, something that's got high sugar content, you know, like glazed donuts and such, because what happens there is that, you know, the sugar gets into the bloodstream and then it comes out just as quick, and you're going to get that high, that you're going to get that rush for a little while, but then it's going to drop real quick. And you're going to you know, feel like somebody just beat you with a 2x4 out there. So stay away from the high sugar snacks.
Yep.
The other thing, you know, about the warm-up is that, you know, unfortunately, a lot of golfers don't do any type of stretching prior to getting to the driving range. And unfortunately, that increases the potential for injury, number one. But the other benefit of doing some sort of dynamic warm-up, you know, 5 to 10 minutes of some dynamic stretches, is that it kind of gets the heart pumping, gets the blood flowing, it opens up the blood vessels so that the muscles are now, you know, bathed in blood and oxygen. And the brain especially, you know, the topic being mental alertness, I mean, the brain loves oxygen, and, you know, when you can open up those blood vessels, what's called vasodilation, and exercise does that, you're going to get more oxygen to the body and to the brain, and you're just going to be more mentally alert.
And that's so true. Sorry, Lloyd, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Well, I was going to agree with that. That's the other part that we didn't touch on was the stretching and you know, getting yourself going, getting the blood pumping there. You know, like the mechanic, Miguel, when he does his little warm-up routine, people were laughing at it, but that's an excellent warm-up routine that he goes through there. I mean, he's really, you know, moving and loosening things up. I know from my own game, personally, that if I get there in ahead of time, I sit there for about 15 minutes on the range, and I lay down on the ground, I stretch out, I do all these little things that, you know, that help me stretch out. Then I start on my little warm-up practice swings, little, you know, little pitching wedge, a little sand wedge, a little 40-yard shot, and work my way up and all that. Then I play my best rounds. I mean, stretching out and getting your body ready for an athletic endeavor that you're about to embark on is, to not do that is foolish.
Yeah, and what people don't realize, too, is it's like anything, whether you're, you know, working out or what have you, you need to sort of warm up because the muscles, as Bob had mentioned, you know, certainly they love, have the oxygen and so forth, but they need to be, you know, limbered up a little bit and warmed up, and especially if you're playing in the north in the fall time where, you know, sometimes temperatures get a little cooler, and you're crazy really to get out there and start playing without doing some sort of a warm-up preparation. Great answers, guys. Thank you. And we're going to move on to the next key, if you will, and that's not to try too hard for a specific score. Play each shot as best you can. Trying does not work in golf. You simply can't force a good score. The only thing you can certainly do is try your best at, and is that is the shot you are about to play. Focus on process, not results, and you'll certainly play better. You can't change anything about what has preceded, and looking into the future, what you think you might score only takes away your zaps you of energy and focuses away from really what you're going to do in the present. And a really solid shot routine is the best way to stay in the present and do everything possible to execute the shots as best you can. Scott, I'm going to let you expand a little bit on that, if you will, first and foremost. A lot of golfers out there get a number in their head, and they just it sort of overtakes the round. Talk a little bit about that and what you try to do to help your students to not focus too much on a score.
Wow, Ted, I think you hit just about every point for the mental game that you possibly could in 30 seconds or less.
All right, well, nice talking to you guys.
that was pretty good. I think we're done for the night. You know, I think the best rounds that I think my students and myself included have ever gone out are the ones where we've gone out when you've had zero expectation. And the thing that I found that happens is after a long layoff, like especially being up in the north, You know, the first round of the season, you go out and you just want to get out to the ball, and you have you could care less what the score is. The greens aren't the best. The you know, we haven't greened up here, and then all of a sudden you go out and you're shooting and playing the best that you've played. And I think there's a lot of times that we go out, I'll take my students out, and there's just no expectation whatsoever. And we work really, really hard, hit a shot, and work on post-shot routine. Everybody talks about pre-shot routine a lot, but I think it's very important to have a post-shot routine as well. And employing that post-shot routine, you know, maybe you only have 7 seconds to react to a bad shot. And I think one of the biggest things is players need to reward themselves for hitting good shots. I think the expectation is, hey, I just hit a really good shot, and I'm supposed to do that, but yet they berate themselves when they hit a bad shot. And I think that trend needs to be reversed as such as, hey, it's okay to, you know, pat myself on the back and say, you know what, I just hit a really good shot and enjoy that. I think that those are some important keys that I think get missed. We all talk about pre-shot, but nobody ever talks about post-shot, or it's talked about very little. And I think you hit a lot of those points of keeping, you know, working on the process and the routine and not having any expectations. I think the tour players do a really, really good job of just keeping a very even level throughout the round. And they don't judge themselves by the shots that they hit. In other words, their self-esteem and self-worth isn't tied into a golf shot. It's just that, a shot.
Yep.
Hit a shot, find it, move on, and hit the next one.
Right.
Yeah, and I want to thank you, Scott, for jumping into the next mental key for me. You actually led into that very well. Talked about routine for every shot, so thank you for doing that. That worked in quite well. Bob, let me just get you in here just for a second, then Lloyd, I'll jump to you. You know, obviously a lot of players, we're obviously dealing with the high handicappers or your weekend warriors, tend to focus on the score a lot. You know, they get a number in their head, okay, maybe they're trying to break 80, and it just sort of encompasses that. But the reason why, and Bob, I want you to, and I'm not going to, you know, try to get you to do strictly on the fitness side of things all the time, but I think there's an importance there because a lot of people don't understand how important being in shape, and that doesn't mean you have to look like a bodybuilder, but being in shape is going to affect how you play. So let's take it again from a fitness standpoint. What are some things that people can do, you know, on a regular basis that's very easy to work in, that's not going to involve, you know, going to a gym or things that they can do to help get them in better physical shape, but also help them to mentally be better prepared so that when they go out, they're not thinking about the score so much. They're out there, they feel better, they're working at their game better, and obviously, ultimately, they're going to score better. So give us a few points, if you can, Bob, and then, Lloyd, I've got something a little different for you.
Yep.
Okay, well, before I answer that question, I want to go back to the previous question. I had a very well-known golfer in the area here tell me once, you know, don't add up your score as you go along. You know, play each hole individually.
Right.
Each hole's a new adventure. For me, each shot's a new adventure. But, you know, if you worry about tallying up your score as you go along, you're focused on the wrong thing. You know, you just want to focus on each shot and each hole. And that's why, you know, I think formats like, Stableford, and even match play are even fun to play because, you know, you're not so concerned about your total overall score. You're basically just kind of playing each hole individually. So, yeah, so that would be my advice is don't tally up your score as you're going along. Just wait till you get finished with the round, and then you can kind of add it up. As far as the fitness thing is concerned, I mean, it will keep you sharp. You know, obviously the better shape you're in, you'll stay sharper throughout the entire round. I think a lot of golfers tend to fatigue on the back nine, either because they're not drinking throughout or not eating properly or just not in shape. And so, I mean, playing golf is, you know, it's an effort. And, you know, if you're not in shape, it'll be more of an effort. And so, I mean, you know, the swing is such that if you're just a millimeter off, you know, you're going to hit a poor shot. So when it comes down to the back nine, you want to make sure that the conditioning level is there so that each shot, you know, that you're focusing on is going to be sharp. So in that regards, I mean, you definitely want to focus on the cardiovascular conditioning. I mean, you don't have to go out there and run marathons to be in shape to play golf, but, you should be doing something cardiovascularly 3 to 4 days a week, working up to at least 30 minutes if you can. And when you're first starting out, you want to, maybe start with 10 minutes or 15 minutes and gradually build that up. And then always check with a physician before you start any type of exercise program. How's that
sure.
for a disclaimer? And then you definitely also
yep.
want to get into you want to get into the the golf specific strength exercises, so that again, the stronger the muscles are, the less likely that they are going to fatigue as you go through the rounds, and that will also reduce the potential for injury, because fatigue is a precursor to injury. And then balance. Balance is also an issue that a lot of people don't really think about, but can really kind of take quite a bit of energy, to maintain your balance as you're, swinging, exploding through the golf swing, and you have yourself in all these various postures and positions with all these different shots that you're hitting. So balance is key as well. And then the last thing there, obviously, is the flexibility, the range of motion. And that's probably one of the bigger things that many golfers lack that they need to work on. But, find yourself a certified golf fitness instructor in your area, and get together with them, and I tell you, it will make a world of difference in your playing performance and the way you feel both during and after a round of golf.
Yeah, and it sure will. And let me just add to that, Bob, really quickly. Not everybody in the golf industry, all the teachers and instructors, are certified in that area. So they certainly may be able to help you with the mechanics of the swing, but you definitely need to, as Bob mentioned, you need to find a certified fitness instructor, golf fitness instructor in your area to help you with the other components of playing good golf. And what a great way to wrap that up. Thank you, Bob, for that. Lloyd, I'm going to, since Scott sort of helped us move into the next phase, if you will, let's talk really quickly, unless you have any specific comments you want to make about focusing on not focusing too hard on the score, but about the routine itself, a pre-shot and post-shot routines. Where do you want to go from there? Do you want to tackle that, or do you want to? Is there something you want to add to what's been discussed?
Well, just one little add. I love what Scott said about a post-shot routine, and I'm going to steal that or use that. I think that's a great idea. I mean, I remember reading one time that Jack Nicklaus said that, after he got done with the hole, good or bad, he shut the door on it and never thought about it again and just continued on. And that's what I try to teach my students, too, is that after a shot's happened, shut the door on it, And one of the things that I try to get the guys that when they hit a shot and you see them, throw their club or pound it down in disgust and they turn away and look at it and all that stuff, I try to get them to say, hey, give it a little laugh. Hey, oh, wow, where'd that come from? And not get into a negative mode. Don't let that drag you down. That shot's over with. There's nothing you can do about it. Just move on and let's go to the next shot.
Yep.
And let's figure out, here's a new challenge. You're underneath a tree. Hey, you've been working on that low shot. Now's the time to play it. Let's do it. So, yeah, that post routine, that post shot routine is a great idea. Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, and Scott, I'm going to let you expand a little bit more on that. Let me just read this first, though.
Okay.
Really, the third mental key is to really have a meticulous routine for every shot. The shot routine is probably the most important part of a good mental game, and over time it creates positive habits. There are really three parts, the pre-shot routine, the shot itself, and, of course, the post-shot routine, as Scott had mentioned. Scott, just when you're working with your students, and the reason why I want to do this is I want you to take it from that angle, is probably the best way to explain it. Talk a little bit about what you try to encourage your students to do in preparation for a round and to get them mentally focused on. Let's talk about the pre-shot routine, the shot itself, and then a post routine following up.
So, and I think they do it really, really well. And this kind of goes back to Annika Sorenstam and Lynn Marriott and Pia Nielsen with Division 54 work that they do out in, I believe they're out in Arizona. And that's kind mm-hmm. of having that line and having the think box and the play box. And
right.
I think the greatest way to explain it is, you know, when you're behind that line, and they do a fantastic job because it's non-mechanical. You know, we're going to go through, you know, checking our yardage and checking the lie and picking the club and doing the wind and figuring out where we're going to land all the ball and do all the things that we need to do on the left side of the brain. And then as soon as you step over that line, you're getting engaged to your target, and that becomes your focus. And you drop the mechanical part of it. You know, I think with, like, Dr. Rotella, you know, he's gone into it great length, especially with Jason Duffner. If you ever watch Duff, he has 9 waggles, sometimes it's 6, sometimes it's 7. You know, everybody was so regimented, and your routine has to be consistent. Well, you know, Dr. Bob does it really well. It says, hey, as long as you have that routine and it works, right, and it serves its purpose, it doesn't have to be so regimented. So, you know, you've got to be, you know, in the moment, in the shot, look at your target, pull the trigger, non-mechanical thoughts, and play the shot that you have that day. If like me, I play a draw most of the time, and if I don't have it that day, I'm not going to continue to try and force it and make mechanical corrections. I'm going to play what I've got on the course. And then that kind of segues into the post shot. And again, the guys have already touched base on this a little bit, is, hey, let's, you know, either, hey, it was a good shot, you know, hey, I didn't do this the way I wanted to, I've got my 7 seconds to react to it, good, bad, indifferent, and then you put it away. And the minute, whether it's you physically putting the club in the bag, whether it's you undoing the Velcro on your glove or some other trigger, once that occurs, you're done. And it's over and done with, and you move on to the next shot, and you start getting ready to focus on what you need to do. And as you're walking up to your ball, you may be assessing the wind, or, you know, if you hit it, you know, a little right or left, you might start to assess the lie or where the pin position is. You should already be on to your next shot. And I think the guys did a really good job of kind of outlining that in the previous question. But that's kind of in a nutshell how we start to attack it. And this, you know, we do this in practice. A lot of what we're talking about doesn't just happen in the middle of a round. These things, you know, get worked on like any other part of the game, just like the fitness gets worked on. I think the mental side,
yep.
People have to spend some time, and I don't think they spend enough time doing that.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's so true. You know, I think one of the really the biggest culprits out there for zapping a good round from the average golfer is they don't, number one, they don't have a really good pre-shot routine. They don't know what to do over the shot. They get too many, you know, thoughts going through their head. Here's another way to sort of put it together. One of the things that I think the pros do very, very well is they have an ability to change their focus. For instance, when they're, you know, walking a pre-shot routine, they're thinking about what it is they need to do to execute the shot. They're thinking about, you know, the yardage, and as you said, Scott, there. And then they get over they might have one swing key or one swing thought, and that's it. They don't cloud their head with a lot of, you know, other things going on in their mind. They execute the shot that they've prepared for. And then their post-shot routine, as Lloyd had mentioned, you know, in Nicholas' case, if it was a bad shot, they close it out. They get themselves ready for the next shot. But what a lot of the pros do that amateur doesn't do, when they're walking to their next shot, they widen their focus a little bit. And what I mean by that is longer thinking. They're no longer thinking about a specific task at hand. They're maybe looking around. They're maybe watching. They're still in focus of the round, but they're looking around and they're observing and sort of enjoying that particular moment until they get into the zone again and narrow that focus back for the next shot. So they're able to take themselves in and out very effectively by doing that. So overcrowded with thought and focus on the hand that, because it's difficult, I don't care what level of player you're at, to stay sort of in that zone for 4.5 hours or for an average round is extremely difficult. So you have to be able to take yourself out of that zone occasionally. And I think there's the pros are probably the example, and I think the women particularly are very effective at doing that. you to very briefly scratch on the surface as well that you do to try and get your students in a sort of a pre-shot routine and then how you get them to handle the shots?
Who is that question for?
That was for you, Lloyd. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm sorry. What Scott touched on, I use a lot of that Vision 54 stuff. That's a great. You know, I tell my students all the time. You know, you're playing golf with your buddy, and you guys are having a nice little competitive round, but you're also with your buddy. You know, you've got a time to think and talk about, hey, how's the wife? How's the job going between holes and all that. You can think a little bit of mechanical stuff. Wow, you know, I feel like my finger is hurting or whatever. And then when you get ready to step up to your shot, all that thinking is gone. And now you got to focus in on target. And what it does is it prepares the body when you have a pre-shot routine that the mind is now telling the body, fun time with my buddy is over, and now it's golf time. And exactly what you touched on, to be mentally constantly through 4.5 hours of thinking about mechanics and your swing and what your instructor taught you, what you've been working on the range, and that just wears you out mentally. I mean, you've got to be able to take a break from that, go back to fun time. You're in between holes. You're in between shots. You're walking with your buddy. You got a beautiful day. You talk a little bit. You get that. Cleanse your mind of the mechanics. You know, go into your pre-shot routine. Get your yardages, get your wind, get your uphill, downhill, side hill lie. Where do you want this to land? All that. You think about that. And the moment you step over that line, now you clear all that out of your head and focus in on target. Target, target, target. And just to touch on one little thing that always helped me out, that I always tell my students a little bit on this subject, is Fred Schumacher, who one time when I was with him said to me, because I used to lose my temper a lot. And Fred said, he goes, what if I told you that your first hole, you're going to take a triple bogey? You know, my first hole in my public course is the course that I played was a par five. And I'm sitting there thinking, if I got an 8 on that first hole, I'd be ticked. And he goes, but what if I told you the next 17 holes were going to be the greatest 17 holes that you've ever played? Wouldn't you take that? And I thought about it, and I says, yeah, as a matter of fact, I would. So you can't let one hole, you can't let one shot overtake your mental part of the rest of the round. You've got 4.5 hours to be out there. You got to close the door on it. You got to close the door on it. You got to get yourself into a pre-shot routine that you're consistently doing so you say, hey, I've just closed the door on that. I'm on to the next thing and move forward, never look back.
Yeah, I agree wholeheartedly. And you know, really the purpose of this playing this is I think a lot of the average golfers out there, are looking for a quick fix. They're looking for whatever will ease their bad swing mechanics or what will, clear their slice in 30 seconds or less. And the problem is the industry in general, I think for a long, long time has sort of followed suit. And by offering some of these quick fixes. And, you know, some things can be fixed very quickly, but a lot of things are going to take time. And everybody seems to focus on, and I'm referring to the players now, focuses on the mechanical side of things. And really, the mental side is much, in my opinion, much more important. I think, you know, most people can hit a pretty decent shot, whether it's 150 or 250 yards down the fairway. But if you can't sort of gain control of your mental side of things, it doesn't matter how good of a ball striker. And proof of that is on the tour itself. If you look at some of the players that have dominated over, they've had a very, very strong mental game. Those that have – I mean, most of the guys that get out on tour, they're not slicing and hooking and whatnot in the woods all the time or they wouldn't be on tour. The guys that fare better and play better week in, week out – have a very tough mental approach to their games and have, a good handle on things, and some better than others. And that's why you see a dominant player like Tiger and others in the past. Annika Sorenstam, of course, is another one on the ladies' side. Which brings me to this the mental key number four is having a strong course strategy. It's certainly worth spending time to think carefully about every shot. And well-known Ben Hogan often said, he who misses best wins. And this is certainly true. All golfers, whether they're novice right through to the tour pro, is going to miss their targets from time to time. It's not being negative. It's just a statistical certainty. So factoring into any decision you make for your drives and approach shots is smart. So, Bob, I'm going to bring this to you now. And I know that your expertise is on the fitness side, Matt. But talk a little bit about strategy, if you will. What are some things that you think that a lot of golfers need to do and how they can better their rounds by having a well-thought-out strategy?
Well, I think all you guys are hitting the nail on the head by, you know, saying that you need a pre-shot routine and you need to think about, you know, what it is you're doing. Unfortunately, I think a lot of golfers tend to have negative swing thoughts, you know, when they're standing over the ball. You know, this is going to go in the water, this is going to go in the trap, I'm going to shank this shot. And I think, you know, if you can think more of what it is that you need to do on this next shot, you know, like Lloyd and Scott have both said, you know, taking in considerations of the distance, the wind, the slope, and all that kind of stuff, you won't be thinking about the negative swing thoughts. You know, I had a conversation once with a very prominent sports psychologist over at UNC Chapel Hill, Elizabeth Hedgepin. And she said, you know, she's a whip, I tell you, she's quite a character. And she said basically the brain controls everything. You know, and she even had us do this little drill. You know, she gave us a metal washer on the end of a string, and she had us place our elbows on the table and hold the string, the end of the string between our thumb and our forefinger with the washer, you know, the weighted washer hanging down. And she says, now just image, you know, mentally image the washer going in a clockwise circle. And, you know, son of a gun, if the washer didn't start going in a clockwise circle, now she says, now imagine the washer going counterclockwise. And I tell you, you know, it's a fun little thing to do, and you should try it because it works every single time that the brain basically controls everything. And, you know, the neuromuscular pathway between the brain and the body is one that needs practice. And, you know, when a golfer has a particular swing fault, you know, a lot of times it can be correlated to anatomical deficiencies that the golfer has, but a lot of times it also is correlated to just the fact that they have bad habits. And, you know, once you correct the deficiency, if they have it, you still need to correct, you need to rewire that brain-body connection, you know, the neuromuscular pathway, so that you're now doing, you know, you have a good habit, you're in the good hitting positions versus the bad hitting positions. So I think that's key, you know, and that's where, you know, the whole collaboration between the fitness spoke of the wheel and the skill spoke of the wheel, you know, with the teaching professional, really can make a big difference for golfers. But yeah, you know, you got to stay positive. As Elizabeth Hedgepin would say, you got to go right brain. She used to have, matter of fact, when the particular day I was speaking to her was during the Olympics, and she had a student who was in the javelin toss. She said, if they show him before the event, you'll see he'll be juggling. She has all her basically student athletes try to get into juggling, because what that does is it takes you into right brain. So basically you don't think about the negative thoughts. You're focused on this juggling, and it makes the skill, the activity that you're performing, you know, it makes it easier to do because you're not, you know, stressing yourself out. So I hope I answered the question.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that was well said, Bob. Thank you. And I've actually done that little experiment that you were talking about. I've actually done that. That was something that a teacher in I think it was when I was in high school did that same little. It's been around for a long time, but it does work, as you said. It works every time, and it's amazing. Really the connection between the brain and the body, just what it can do. And you know, again, I want to emphasize, a lot of people might be listening to the program and thinking, well, what does all this mean and why do I have to, you know, I just want to go out and play. There's been a lot of frustration in golf for quite some time now. A lot of individuals that, and it's not to, you know, I'm not trying to throw blame on those in the industry, but I just think that the industry is starting to recognize that there's a lot more to golf instruction and fitness than what they once thought. And there's a lot of great individuals, present company included, you guys, that are doing a lot of great work out there. And I think there's a lot of frustrated golfers because they've been under the understanding that if they can just find this quick little fix or this quick little cure, that their problems are going to go away, or a piece of equipment in their bag is going to solve all their problems. And the reality is, it's, you know, golf, much like life, is a journey. And there's a lot of things that we all have to do. Certainly you need to be connected with a certified instructor or quality instructor, both fitness and otherwise. And you want to make sure that your thoughts and your views are being listened to and articulated well. But I think what's happened is the average golfer needs to understand that there's something that they have to do as well. It's not, you know, the instructor is just not going to give them a quick fix and everything's going to be done. There's a part that they have, a role, if you will, that they have to play. And that means, like we talked about in the beginning, they need to eat smarter, to put better food in their body so that their body is going to be able to handle some of the tasks that are going to come out. And golf is not certainly an easy game. But with the right tweaks and so forth here and there, it can be an enjoyable game. And Scott, I want you to touch on this a little bit about strategy, some of the things that people that you're doing in your clinics and so forth that are helping. And actually, what I want to do is I want to change that just slightly because you're dealing with, in some cases, with a very unique group of individuals. Of course, if you've tuned into the program before, Scott has a foundation that works with a lot of veterans that have come back over the years that have been wounded warriors, if you will. How do you handle it with them, particularly, Scott, because they have some disadvantage that maybe the average golfer doesn't have?
You know, it's funny. We don't change how we teach for the individuals that come back with disabilities. We approach the game the exact same way. Golf, and you and I have talked about it, Ted. Golf is very unique in one way that it is the one sport that a person with a disability can compete against an able-bodied golfer under the very same rules. There doesn't have to be modifications.
Yep.
If you happen to be in a single-rider cart and you can't get to your ball to hit it, you take the unplayable lie, there's rules to cover that, you take the extra stroke and you go and you play. There isn't another sport that you can do that in. So I think in our preparation with the veterans or anybody that has a disability, able-bodied or not, is the exact same approach all the way down the line. And to kind of backtrack real quickly to the juggling thing, you know, a lot of people think, you know, the guys are showing off a little bit, but along the juggling lines, what do you think we do with a golf ball when we're sitting there with a wedge bouncing it up and down? And it takes some thought to do that, and it kind of relates to the juggling just to kind of backtrack. But as far as the strategy goes, it's like any other golfer. You know, if we're playing tournament conditions and you have time to get to the course, you know the course, mentally playing around in your head, knowing what clubs you're going to play off, what holes, and having a game plan and sticking to that game plan. You know, we've touched on a lot of different mental aspects, but I think, you know, people start to deviate from their game plan because, you know, they had an expectation to shoot a certain number or a score or the conditions have changed slightly, and all of a sudden you're trying to change your game plan. And what we try and emphasize is, you know, when you have the ability to get that practice round on, get it in, write down what clubs you're going to hit, off what holes, you know, have a backup plan, maybe just one other club or you know, just in case, and then stick to that plan throughout the round, and then reassess after the round, and then maybe in round two or three, if you're fortunate enough to be playing, you know, multiple rounds, that you can address that. If not, you address it in the next tournament or in your next practice round.
Yeah, and that's well said. And you know, that's so true, because, you know, you can have certainly a course strategy, and you get out to the golf course, you've got a game plan in mind, and then suddenly the weather conditions change. Maybe now suddenly you're faced with some rain or the wind's picked up, so you have to learn how to adapt. And so it's good to have a backup. And that's a very valid point, Scott. It's good to have a backup plan. If normally, you know, you're going to hit a 5-iron from a specific position, but now maybe you've got a 10 to 15 mile an hour wind in your face, something that 5-iron might not be the club that you need in that particular hole, so you might have to adapt and maybe have to drop down to a 3 or something to that idea, or maybe even a hybrid. So there's a lot of variables that can change, and you need to be prepared for that. And what a lot of people don't realize, even just the, as I said earlier, the weekend warriors out there, it's good to be prepared. The more prepared you are to go out and play your best golf, the more you're going to enjoy it, I think, personally. And that brings us to point number 5. And Bob, I want you to start off on this one. Or, sorry, Lloyd, if you will.
Yeah.
Number 5 is, of course, control your reactions and learn to switch off. We talked briefly about that. Relax and enjoy. Golf is just a game, and unless you're playing certainly for a living and upset about it, it's easier said than done, of course, but in even the slightest negative reaction to a shot can cause stress and tightening of the muscles, which can snowball, and I'm going to let Bob talk about that in a minute. But talk about really controlling your reactions to things, Lloyd. How do you sort of handle things, and what do you do to encourage your students to deal with stressful situations?
All right. Just briefly, I want to go back to what Bob was talking about with the mind controlling the body.
No, I'm sorry, you can't do that. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Okay.
No, I'm sorry, you can't do that. No, go ahead. That's an awesome.
That's exactly where my head is going as far as golf instruction goes. I mean, there's two guys that I really follow a lot on the forums, and one is Adam Young and another guy, Graham McDowell, who talk a lot about that type of stuff, is that the mind actually controls the body. And so the mind has to have a good understanding of what it's trying to do, and it will try to get the body to do that. Now, of course, you might have, you know, physical ailments and all that stuff that may prevent some things from happening, but I think that's a great point. I think that's where golf instruction really needs to go next. As far as controlling your temper, it's back exactly what I was saying about with Jack Nicklaus. You got to close the door on it. And it's easier said than done for a lot of people. But there are golfers, and it kind of sounds cruel in a way when you say this, but, you know, there's an old saying, and I don't know if it was Trevino or somebody like that, says, you're not good enough to be that mad, meaning that you have to enjoy where you're at on the journey you're at. A great book called The Practicing Mind talks about that people are always looking out at the horizon, and they always want to be out there. They always want to be out there, and they forget about the journey that gets them to be out there. And if you're a 25 handicap, you're a 25 handicap. You're going to expect that you're going to hit some bad shots. If you're a 10 handicap, you're a 10 handicap. That's where you are at this particular moment. Enjoy what you're doing as far as what that round is about. Again, going back to Fred Schumacher, he had a bag tag that when I was spent time with him that he gave to every one of his students, and it says, what is your commitment today? So meaning that when you go to the range, what are your commitments? What is your commitment today? I'm committed to work on my 40-yard shot, or I'm committed to work on my bunker shots, or this round of golf is a golf round that I am playing with my best friend that I haven't seen in 2 years. I am going out there. My commitment is to have fun out there. And then what is your commitment for this round? Well, this is a competitive round, and my commitment is to be in the moment for that particular shot and to close the door on the bad shot. And that's your commitment. Make that your commitment and do it. Stick with it. To go ahead and to throw your club down, which I've been noted for doing that and in the past. but you have to understand that everybody hits a bad shot. That, you know, I get students that say to me, well, nobody does it like I do. Nobody goes from hitting a great shot one time to hitting a lousy shot the next time. I go, everybody does. What you think? You don't think that Tiger? I mean, look at what Tiger. I saw a couple highlights what he did today when he snapped, hooked a couple, and then blocked one out to the right or pushed one out to the right. He's missing both ways. You don't think that he's sitting there going, what the hell am I doing? You don't think that he's mad?
Yeah.
Yes, he's mad. He throws off a swear word and bumps his club on the ground, but then he goes up to the next shot. You don't see him sitting there still steaming, steam coming out of his ears. He's into the next shot. You got to close that door on that. If you don't, the game will get you, and you can't let that happen. You got to enjoy the journey you're at.
Yeah, that's so true. Some great points, Lloyd. Bob, let me just ask you something here. you know, as part of the pre-shot routine, I think a good thing for golfers, and this is just sort of a generic one, but, you know, you might have some further insight, but as part of the pre-shot routine, I think it's a good idea to have some positive thoughts, you know, for any given shot. For instance, you might say to yourself, and this is, of course, internally, but, you know, I have a very positive intention for this shot, or I know exactly where I want it to go. I can see it in my mind. These are certainly some things that the average golfer out there can do, is sort of set themselves up mentally in a positive frame of mind. What are some suggestions that you would have for the golfers out there as part of their pre-shot routine, not just the physical side?
Yeah, I mean, there are a bunch of studies out there, you know, on mental imagery and how effective it is in terms of positive outcomes. You know, and like we said before, I mean, I think unfortunately too many golfers get up over the ball and have too many negative thoughts. Whereas, I mean, if you can mentally visualize the swing, visualize the flight of the ball, you know, you're going to have a much better outcome. You know, and then also I just wanted to tie on to what Lloyd, you know, your previous question about, you know, getting stressed out on the golf course and throwing your clubs. I mean, not only, you know, do you you know, kind of increase the risk of injury for yourself, but for others around you. But, you know, physiologically, you know, stress tends to kind of tighten you up. It takes you off your game plan because, you know, you're not thinking, you know, these positive thoughts, your mind somewhere else. You know, it actually will constrict your blood vessels, where we talked about before, where you get out onto the driving range and you do some stretches and it opens up the blood vessels. Stress will constrict your blood vessels, so that kind of reduces the blood flow to the muscles and to the brain. And so, you know, the mental alertness piece that, you know, we're basically talking about will go away, because you're basically defeating yourself by getting stressed out on the golf course, and you're increasing the risk of injury because of the fact, you know, that, you know, stress tends to tighten you up. So not a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. You know, the common theme tonight is get over it, move on to the next shot, and, you know, focus on, you know, the task ahead.
Yeah, very well said. And just to add on to that, you know, obviously – we can have all the positive imagery and thoughts, you know, going in before any given shot. But the reality is that obviously from time to time, it's not going to go the way that we want it. And we just have to accept it and move on without getting angry. And you know, as we know, that this will certainly hurt your game and hurt your enjoyment. And, you know, we also have to remember, too, for you out there, that remember that even the best players in the world hit the ball in the water and the trees from time to time. The difference is they can easily and quickly forget about it. They've worked through their pre-shot routines. They've worked through even their post-shot routines. And they're able to get their mind back on, as one of you just mentioned here a second ago about Tiger. Tiger has sort of a 10-pace rule where he allows himself to 10 paces to dwell or be upset about a particular shot, and then it's back. Lloyd, I think it was you that mentioned that. It's back to the shot at hand. You know, between shots, it's this is your time, as we mentioned earlier, really to enjoy, you know, your time on the golf course. You've been offered to be out there. To be out there on the golf course among nature and friends and family and things like that you might, or maybe a business associate you might have just met. So you need to take a moment and smell the rose, as they say, and enjoy the game and just enjoy. And Scott, I'm going to let you have some final thoughts here as well. Obviously, you work with a lot of different students as well up in the Detroit area. What are some quick things, if you can, just add to it that you do to try and get people to relax and enjoy the round?
Well, that's a simple question and a really tough question. I think, you know, we've touched on a lot of really, really good points, but I think ultimately at the end of the game, at the end of the day, there's two things that you got to realize. A, it's just a game, and two, we all play it because we love the game. We love to play it. And it's, you know, at least with, and you touched it a little bit with the veterans, you know, these are individuals that, you know, probably played golf before and now have a disability. And the one thing that they want to do more than anything else is get back out on the golf course and have that social aspect and do something that they enjoy doing and love doing. So for them, them is, hey, I can get back on the golf course. I can hit a ball. I can go, you know, play with my friends. I can socialize with my buddies. I can be back out doing something that I enjoy doing, and it gives them a sense of normalcy. And I think for all of us, we kind of take that for granted. I'm certainly guilty of it at times. But first and foremost,
yep,
it's a game. And the one thing that I really want to stress,
yeah, exactly,
have some fun. It's a game. Have fun. You play it because you want to enjoy it. It shouldn't be, you know, like the guys are saying, very stressful. You know, you're out in nature. You're playing a beautiful course. It's a beautiful day. You know, take 5 minutes, 5 seconds, and just smell the roses and enjoy it. And be thankful that you have the opportunity to play.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's something that really has been lost, you know, in recent times with golf, with the average golfer, I think, because they focus so much on their swing mechanics and they're watching so many videos and whatnot that they're just bombarded with all kinds of messages. And it's become very confusing and you know, then they get out there and they're not able to handle some of the situations and they just become overwhelmed by all the information. And they're just not enjoying it anymore. And as we've all, I think, spoken of tonight, it is a game. It's meant to be fun and enjoyed. And we can certainly be competitive and be aggressive when need be. But at the same time, let's get out there and enjoy it and have fun. And as instructors and teachers, particularly, let's make sure that the students are doing just that. Guys, I want to thank you very much for tackling this tonight. And I appreciate you, as always, giving up your time this evening. Very quickly, I'll start with Bob, and then we'll go to Lloyd, and then Scott will round you out at the end here. Very quickly, if anyone wants to get in touch with you, Bob, how can they get a hold of you and mention your website again?
Yeah, well, my email address is bob@golffitcarolina.com. It's one F and one T, so it's G-O-L-F-I-T Carolina. The website, I got a bunch of educational articles and videos on there to help you play the game better physically, is www.golffitcarolina.com. And then my book also, Functional Golf Fitness Training, is available on Amazon and at the Book Patch.
Very good. Excellent. Thank you, as always, Bob, for coming on. I always appreciate your thoughtful insight and helping the listeners out there. Lloyd, please.
You cut out there. Hello.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lloyd. Go ahead. Just let the listeners know how they can get where they can reach you if they're interested in connecting.
Yeah. You know, the easiest way is Lloyd Higley, LLOYDHIGLEY. @gmail.com or the website chicagolandgolfacademy.com. I'm also in Chicago, and then in the winters I spend down in Lake Mary, Florida, which is a beautiful place. Either one of those places is the best way to contact me.
Perfect. And certainly last but not least, Scott?
So through either of my websites, the simpleworldofgolf.com or the norestrictionsgolf.org, or you can simply email me, scott@thesimpleworldofgolf.com.
I appreciate it. Well, as always, guys, much for your insight and input. Always greatly appreciate you, Graham. And I hope that we've helped a few golfers out there anyways. The mental side is that we're going to get into, believe me, much more in depth as time goes on, as I've mentioned in the past shows, and I think Bob, when I Scott, you might have been here as well. I'm going to be starting a new series as part of the Coach's Corner called Plan for Success, and there's going to be several components, the fitness, nutrition, equipment, of course, instruction, the practice side, and a little bit on the mental side as well again. And then we're going to wrap it up, but we're going to do a little bit differently. I'm going to explain in the next couple of weeks exactly what's going to happen. I'm going to be sending an email out to everybody that I would like to participate in this. So I hope you guys can join in. I think it's going to be fun, and we're going to cover a lot of areas and try and help some people improve their game and just enjoy the game first and foremost. But, guys, thank you very much for this evening, and I look forward to always having you guys come back. You have an open-door policy here on Golf Talk Live.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ed.
Yep, bye.
All right. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye. Okay. I want to thank, again, my Coach's Corner panel, Bob Foreman, Lloyd Higley and Scott Millman for coming on the panel tonight. I've got my my guest this evening, of course, waiting in the wings here, so I'm going to bring him out as I've had him waiting here for a few moments. My guest this evening that I'm going to be interviewing is a gentleman that I've been speaking with for quite some time now, since actually before starting this program, Sean Kelly. He's the owner-director of Linked Golfers, and let me just tell you a little bit about him first before I bring him on, and then I'll tell you a little bit about Linked Golfers. Sean is, of course, a career writer and editor with over 25 years' experience in covering business, technology, travel, and leisure industries. He's held several senior positions on projects that have spent time in the New York Times bestseller list, been included on the famous annual edition of Oprah's Favorite Things, and more. His most memorable golf moment was competing in and covering the World Ice Golf Championship on the frozen ocean just off the western coast of Greenland in temperatures in the neighborhood of 60 below, and that's Fahrenheit. Lord have mercy, that's cold. So he's got a great resume here. A little bit about Linked Golfers. It's the number one golf group on LinkedIn of nearly 5,000 golf groups on LinkedIn. It's number one, which in turn is by far the most popular business network in the world. Built originally as a closed network, up until it reached about halfway point, 1,000 members. It's got over 30,000 now, certainly meaning that the group and conversations weren't indexed through the search key. The group really had to be discovered, as he puts it, and members had to be approved. And the reason being, obviously, and I'll let him explain more, but I want you to welcome my very special guest tonight, Mr. Sean Kelly from Linked Golfers. And I think he's still holding.
I can hear me okay.
Good evening, Sean. Welcome to Golf Talk. Yeah, I can now. I'm sorry. That was my fault.
No,
I had to
no problem.
Hit the hold button here. Not a problem.
You know,
thanks for waiting.
I was really enjoying it.
Ran a few.
Okay, so you start.
No problem. I ran over a few minutes, unfortunately, with the coach's corner, and I saw that you were on hold there, so I apologize, first off, for having you wait a little bit longer than I anticipated, but I needed to finish up that segment. And actually, I don't know if you're not, but one of the panelists tonight, Bob Foreman, was on the program one of the nights that you had called in, and you had some questions, a fitness question, as I recall. That was the same gentleman that you were speaking to that night.
Yeah, you know, I actually wanted you to keep them aboard because I was listening to the segment and it, you know, for most of the hour ahead of time, and I had plenty of responses. I wanted to kind of rumble in the jungle with some of them. Yeah, for example, Scott had I think he said Pedialyte was gross. Now, I'm not sponsored by Pedialyte, but there are some countries where Pedialyte becomes really, really necessary.
Yeah.
But you know, I think, you know, Bob has written a few pieces since we've talked, actually, and in fact, he sent me a copy of his book, and while I wish I had a chance to read it, my brothers keep stealing it from me. They're chiropractors, and they also have been involved with the Titleist Institute. So, you know, they actually were quite impressed with his work, and so I was hoping to connect with him and give him a little trouble, you know, keep things active.
Yeah, exactly. Let's ask probably the most obvious thing. I mean, you and I understand, you know, what it is that you're doing, but for the listeners that are tuning in tonight, let's sort of shed some light. What is Linked Golfers, and how is it different from some of the other social media channels?
Okay, well, you know, social media has become this, well, I don't even want to say buzzword. It's so far beyond that at this point. I've been working on developing communities for quite a long time, and in actuality, they're really not that different than they were maybe since, I don't know, the 1980s. LinkedIn's a great example because it's very text-based, and there's not a lot of, you know, ability to share some of the more, I don't know, visual elements, you know, or audio,
right,
or video, or what you're doing here. You know, there's an opportunity in other environments to create networks that are more, you know, that are richer and have more features to them. But the concern with that I feel with the current state of social media as it relates to golf, is that, you know, we have enough voices in our heads already.
Yeah.
You know, as we're standing right over the ball, we've got enough noise going on, and I think this is just yet another golf metaphor for us all to relay and I think to translate into our lives. My intent with Link Golfers is really to bring a more focused social aspect, and maybe you might call it a pro-social media. You know, I don't want to start coining buzzwords really and to be ultra clever, but the idea here is to really funnel what you really want and not spend a whole lot of time necessarily on birthday messages. And you know, it not that that's bad, of course.
Right.
When's your birthday? I better write it down
March.
Now.
Okay.
Yeah, happy
March.
Birthday at a 16. Time. I better.
Yeah.
Well,
but you're right.
So, you know,
you raise a valid point, Sean, because you know a lot of the social media that's out there. You know, there's just a lot of chatter really about nothing. And that was, again, one of the reasons that led me to do this program was I wanted to, you know, I've been through a lot of the different forums, golf forums and things, and certainly some interesting information, but, and I want you to address this because I know this is important to you. You know, a lot of them, you get hit spam after spam with just a lot of nothing but heavy marketing, and it's really not beneficial. I mean, it might be interesting to the person that's doing it, but the average person that's sifting through all of the spam, just trying to get to the good stuff, it's annoyance. That's something that you've really strived to eliminate as best you can through Linked Golfers, correct?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And you know what? Sometimes it makes my image look sort of awful because people do have sincere reasons for joining, but they don't meet the requirements that demonstrate they're not just the next spammer. For example, you know, on LinkedIn, when someone wants to apply to the group, they might appear like they've got no friends and they're part of no other groups or whatever. And as soon as you approve them, then the spam comes coming. You know, I mean, it's coming in like 120 items a day. And what I'm trying to do is filter messages in a meaningful way so that people are having sincere dialogues. You know, and that it really is a huge challenge. But, you know, beyond that, I think that on the proactive side, keeping a group small allows people to feel more involved. So, you know, in my career, I've worked in print media and, you know, for magazines that had 1.5 million subscribers. But you lose a sense of what people want. At a certain point, and you kind of lose contact with where everything is headed. And it's my argument at this point that it's not a quantity goal; it's a quality goal, and particularly in golf,
right?
You know, because you want to be able to connect, right?
Yeah,
you want to connect with people who have like the same desires, whether it's like how they're using their sand wedge or the mental game or some of the things that you know your previous guests were discussing, which is, you know, really part and parcel of what this group is about.
Yeah, and that's so important. And you know, I certainly appreciate what you're trying to do, because as I mentioned in the lead up here, you know, there's a lot of other groups, golf groups, and I'm not, you know, here to really criticize any of the others, but it's a lot of the same sort of information that goes through it. And what ultimately ends up happening is you're sifting through whether it be spam or a lot of articles that really are not addressing some of the core issues that the average person might want to get information on, and they're just getting bombarded with a lot of stuff. And more often than not, what ends up happening, I mean, I get invited into groups, you know, whether it be on Facebook or LinkedIn all the time, and a lot of times I'll go in there and it's the same, you know, half a dozen or so, I mean, it's a bit of a stretch, but, you know, half a dozen or so people that are putting the same messages up all the time, and, you know, they're not really offering anything to help them. You know, some might argue with me because I'm posting, you know, links to the show, but the idea is to get them to come listen to the show where they can get some of that information. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to work with you is, you know, with your organization, Linked Golfers, was to be able to offer, you know, this type of format to give something to your followers.
Yeah, well, it's been great to hear. I've been enjoying the women's segments and the panels, and you know, I think you're addressing a lot of very important issues. And you know, where you're talking about the spam side of things, I think I've figured out kind of how to deal with that. But you know, one thing that I feel isn't quite getting across to people is whatever they put into it will return to them. And this isn't like a Buddhist sort of philosophy thing. I'm just, you know, or any kind of navel gazing or, you know, anything like that. It's a truth that I'm finding myself, that the people who contribute within our forum really contribute quite a lot, because it opens the public discourse. But a lot of what happens doesn't happen in the public eye. It happens when people approach one another and begin to create these relationships, and that's right. That's what is very difficult to do, and there's no inspiration behind that in Twitter or Facebook. Those are great tools. Again, like you said, I have no argument against them at all. In fact, I use them in certain environments, and they're very effective. But the relationship itself is where you see the real advantages, and I'm starting to see the results of that now, which is really, really satisfying.
What do you think, and the reason why I want to talk, you know, some of the listeners might be wondering, well, you're talking a lot about social media and that, what does it have to do with, you know, helping my golf game? But there's a lot of information out there, and social media is both, particularly for those in the industry, is a very powerful tool for getting your messages out there. And obviously, you know, I don't, you know, used Twitter a lot, but I certainly do it to get my messages out. You've obviously been developing communities since obviously the late 80s, well, really before social media became a term. How have things changed, in your opinion?
Well, you know, I think we are at a phase right now where people are very obsessed with what we're capable of technologically. I mean, some of the technologies that we've had and that were in sort of smaller lab environments or company environments, it's very much like email, frankly. I mean, you had people who were able to communicate by email on these obscure systems and at NASA or something at one point, and then it slowly entered the mainstream, and then it became huge, of course. And then we've all sort of become a little bit passé. Like, no one's saying, hey, I'm doing the twit mail or you know what I mean? So I think we're in this space right now where social media is getting all the attention, but we're not necessarily applying the same things we apply to golf or to our golf games. So it's yet another it's really another metaphor. You know, you want, as your panel said before, you want to be able to go from one shot to the next, but you really need to figure out what's important along the way. You know, we don't really need to put so much energy behind keeping up with everything that's posted, which is our tendency right now. And I think it is important. I think it's a good life lesson along with a golf lesson, is to find the quiet space. You know what I mean? Like, to find that spot where you are walking with a friend, right? And then you get to your shot and you just allow yourself some focus. Like, what does this mean to me?
Well, and you know, you mentioned earlier on the women's program, of course, I co-host that program with Cindy, LPGA professional Cindy Miller, and she brought it really a great series called Own Your Game, and it really addresses a lot of the mental side of it. And one of the things that she talks about is, you know, and I sort of brush strokes, if you will, earlier on it as well, about, you know, having a narrow focus when the time is right, and then widening that focus on the golf course when it's appropriate as well. And really, you need to do that, because as we talked about earlier, if you constantly have a narrow focus, in other words, if you're constantly in that zone about what's the next shot and how do I play this and what do I do throughout your entire round, number one, you're probably going to have a mental breakdown by the time the 4 hours expires. But also, it's going to become very overwhelming. You're going to get fatigued a lot more, and you're not going to have fun. You're going to be too stressed out, and anxiety is just going to sort of creep in there. So one of the things that you know I try to emphasize to tonight to the listeners out there is I want them to understand that, you know, golf is a game, It's meant to be fun. It's meant to be enjoyed. There's a time to be in a serious moment, to be in the zone, if you will, and then there's a time to, you know, smell the roses, talk to your buddy while you're walking down the fairway or coming up to the green. And then there's a time to get in that zone and focus on the shot at hand. But then you need to be able to close that off and just relax a little bit. And too many people, I think, get so caught up and around, especially one of the points that I made about focusing on the score too much. Once that sort of happens, a lot of people get into that zone throughout their round, and then when they're not realizing, that goal or that accomplishment, then they sort of redoubled their efforts, and ultimately by the time they hit the turn, the round is over. They're not enjoying it, and you know they can't wait to get back to the car or the clubhouse. Right? I mean, is that not true?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I'm kind of nursing an injury right now, and I've never had more fun than the way I'm playing golf right now. I'm not scoring because, you know, I'm really not able to post my handicaps at the moment, and it really doesn't reflect where I might be in performance. But at the same time, my golf game is getting better than it's ever been because I will use a 9-iron only on a hole and swing easy, and it turns out that I'm on the green in 3 and might have a chance to putt for par, whereas I'm playing with friends who are, you know, they're slicing something into the woods because they're trying too hard. So there really is a big lesson for me, about this phase. And I'm starting to, you know, I'm starting to play with those kinds of things where I think it was Lloyd that said or quoted someone else, that said, you know, if you had the triple bogey on the first hole but then had the best round of your life after.
Yep.
You know, I totally agree with that, but at the same time, I agree with not keeping score at all and experimenting and enjoying your company. And, you know, competition is important, I think. It's where your skills are really tested, and there's no other environment like it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's equally valuable to get to those points by, especially in golf, by playing easy. You know what I mean? It's really a trainer.
Exactly. A lot of times I think, and I think most people would agree with this, usually your first maybe round or two of the season, especially if, for those golfers out there that are in the northern climates where it's a little cooler and you've sort of gone into hibernation in the winter a little bit, usually your first couple of rounds tend to be your better rounds, mainly because you're not really in – you know, you're not thinking about it as much. You're just out there to sort of, you know, loosen up and get the golf swing back together. But you're not really focusing too much on all the mechanics quite yet. And where a lot of golfers fall into the trap is as time progresses and, you know, a few bad shots creep into the round, suddenly now they get into, a different mode, if you will, and start focusing on, okay, well, now I've got to do this and the elbow's got to be this way and, you know, my left foot needs to be flared a little bit more. And then they start to overthink the process. And by the time, you know, the middle of the summer rolls around, their golf game's in the crapper, if you will. And, they're looking forward to finishing up the season and getting the heck out of Dodge, if you will. And I think a lot of it is that people are just have forgotten to have fun. And, we certainly want to give them good instruction. We want to help their game. And we want people to stay focused, but at the appropriate time. The biggest mistake I see by most high handicap golfers is they tend to take too much of what they're doing on the range out into the golf course and not the good parts. They tend to focus on all of the mechanics once they get out playing around, and that's a sure sign, a sure killer of a good round. Let me ask you, Sean, I think I want to talk a little bit about and get your thoughts and opinions on really the current state of the golf industry. In your opinion, what do you the golf industry and where the info that you write about in your articles?
Well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that because today I received some I was contacted by Peter Walton. I don't know if you've heard of IAGTO. It's IAGTO. It's the International Association of Golf Tour Operators. And, you know, that might sound lengthy or obscure to a lot of people who are just consuming, you know, golf, leisure golfers. But it's one of the main thermometers of the industry, in my opinion. It's they put on a show every year that really helps people from different countries kind of come together and have meetings and discuss what's happening. So I heard from him today, and, well, I know you're an advocate of the ladies, and he was saying, really, in support of what you're doing, really, I mean, he validated your message, and he said that 56% of all courses and golf hotels experiencing significant growth are coming from lady golf visitors during the past 3 years.
Yep.
Overall, you know, I'm quoting some of his recent statistics, and, you know, I tend to go with his over some of the others because I haven't been able to really drill down and get accurate data when I chase it down. But
right,
the travel in terms of travel, I'm looking at a stat now. It says that in 2012, the golf tour operator sales grew by 9.3% in 2012, 10.1% in 2013, and so far this year, between January and March, the most current measurements are 14.5%. So it sounds like the golf industry is quite healthy, frankly, and the only areas that seem to be in decline are with the occasional golfers versus what Mr. Walton's, you know, calling the avid golfer. The avid golfer actually accounts for something like 76% of the entire golf industry, but the occasional golfer is in decline, and I think it's that area of the industry that is more time sensitive. So I don't think we need to change the game radically like has been suggested. You know, there's this 15-inch cup idea, and, you know, there's some other ideas that are interesting. I'm glad to see the whole open-minded thinking process happening, but I really don't buy that the golf industry is doomed, which seems to be the message lately. I think it's actually turning around into a positive.
Yeah, I think we're as you touched on, is a time factor. I think we're a couple of – I've read some stats in that as well, and we talked about this the other night on the phone. But, you know, one of the things that I think has happened is, especially for some of the recreational golfers, because of time restraints, you know, the recession, a lot of people have maybe had to go out and get a second job or have had to ramp up their hours, if you will. So they don't have as much available time, or maybe family obligations have increased. So they don't have the same amount of time that they once did to be able to go out and play as much golf. So I think as far as the rounds, I think this, you know, they talk about, well, the number of golfers have declined. Well, since the majority of golfers out there, of course, have been predominantly male in years past, through a variety of reasons. I mean, obviously, as golfers get older, some stop playing as much, perhaps, or maybe are no longer members, but there's a lot of variables. But the real culprit, if you will, is really a time management. People just don't have as much time as they once did. So the industry has to start getting creative, in my opinion, and start being, and what I mean by creative, a lot of good ideas out there for sure, but I agree with you, changing the game itself radically is not really what they need to do. They need to focus on areas where there hasn't been as much growth in the past, but there is starting to get growth now, like the ladies, for instance, and obviously junior golfers, there's been some growth there as well. And they need to make it more accessible, in my opinion. And I think that's really where some of the areas that they need to. They keep wanting to change the game, but it's really not the game that needs to change. It's the dynamics of who they're getting to come out to play, I think, is what's going to help. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. There's no question. I mean, you think about this game being developed, 600 years ago and then sort of becoming what it is today, 150 years ago or so. And even, I'd say, 20 years ago, I was reading reports saying this is the time of faxes and pagers, but we got like 30...
You're short your age, Sean.
Yeah, I know. Please, can you delete that?
Yeah.
Can you say crappy?
No.
Can you? Okay. All right, so, so basically, we receive in a single week, again, this is back then, the pagers and fax days, but we receive in a single week what our grandparents received their entire lives. You know, so now think about how we've evolved to today and our demands and, you know, the number of requirements we have. And you know, technology is a bit of an enabler, but it's also a tool, you know, so I don't want to, I'm very tech, I would say pro tech, but if you use it wrong, it can be a real, you know, it can really cause a lot of problems. So, you know, I'd like to see technology become part of the way we're interacting. And, of course, my whole business is surrounding technology. I mean, just social networking or, you know, the group on LinkedIn. We're all building around our capability to be able to speak with one another from vast distances. So it's a benefit.
Yep.
But at the same time, you know, we have a responsibility.
Right. Let me just, you know, throw this in there as well. When I was down at the PGA show back in January, you know, there was a lot of technology being thrown around at the show down in Orlando. And certainly, you know, I would say the majority of it was interesting and certainly I can see beneficial. The one thing that I think that the industry has to guard against is that they don't become too reliant on the technology. And in other words, don't allow it to take over instruction or people's enjoyment of the game. It all has a purpose. It all fits in there somewhere. And as new technology becomes available, whether it be through social media or through apps or things like that, it's great to have these tools. And I'm with you. I mean, I'm not against it. And same with the equipment. I think there's a place for everything. The problem that I see sometimes is that you get people that get, just as they do with social media, they get so wrapped up in gadgets and gizmos and things like that, that they forget the very basic fundamentals of golf, and they forget to have fun, and they're out there and they're too busy playing with everything all the time. And equipment is probably
yeah.
one of the biggest culprits. I mean, you know, those drivers and wedges and things that are out there, particularly the drivers, I'll make no bones about it. They're certainly fantastic. They've come a long way. The only negative that I would say about it is I just feel that the and I understand why, it's a marketing ploy, but I think that the industry has allowed too long for the marketing of it to address the average golfer with the analogy that, you know, if you buy this XYZ new driver this year in 2014, you're going to drop X number of strokes and so on and so forth. And the reality is that
right.
if the golfer wasn't able to hit his old driver with any sort of consistency, he might see some improvement, but it's very minimal. You need to understand how to use the tool, if you will, properly. Once you do that, then go out and spend the $400 if you wish on a new driver or the $300,
yeah.
whatever it is. But don't go out there thinking that it's – and it's what I talked about earlier in the segment with the other panel is the average golfer has gotten this mentality of looking for a quick fix, and it just doesn't exist. If the guys on tour and the gals on tour are spending as much time and effort in honing their game in order to get to the level, then what makes you think – believe me, if there was a magic bean that they could all take that was going to make them the next Tiger Woods or the next Phil Mickelson or Annika Sorenstam or what have you, believe you me, somebody would be a multi-billionaire by now.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of components into becoming a better player. And you know, the industry just has to be mindful of that. And the people in my position, whether it be through this forum and in yours, we have to sort of work together in informing the consumers of some great things that are out there, by all means, but to also remember that in the event of a power failure, all of that technology suddenly falls by the wayside.
Yeah, right.
Or the battery goes dead, right?
Sundial.
Exactly. So We have to make sure that we keep our minds fresh with the basics, if you will, and use the others as a tool, as a helping hand, if you will, in explaining things or showing. I mean, video was great when it first was coming out. Everybody could see what their swing looked like. Now you've got apps that can do a lot of stuff, and you can take your own video and so on. So there's a lot of great tools out there, but we have to put it in perspective, and I think we have to be careful that we don't let it sort of overtake in becoming a better player. Sean, let's get back to Link Golfers here for a little bit. You've obviously been working very diligently on this And obviously, by the fact that you've got well over 30,000 members from all across the world and really all types of genres, if you will, what kinds of people are joining your group, and do you have any memorable experiences along the way?
Yeah, I do. If you don't mind, I'd like to comment on the last bit that you were talking about
sure.
Technology on the course. Have you played with people who own the watches, the digital watches?
I actually have had a couple. Yes, I've seen them where they use that. But go ahead. I don't use it myself.
Well,
but go ahead.
Well, I find I have two brothers. Each one of them uses it. And they're always looking at their watch, and I can't help but think every time I play with them, like, where do you have to be? You know, isn't this fun enough? You know what I mean? They're always looking at their distance, but it always seems like they got to be somewhere. So, you know, there's some interesting psychological consequences to, you know, some of the tools that we use. And, you know, some of them are highly unexpected, but, you know, this is migrating into what you're talking about. You know, the Linked Golfers group is really about, relaying these experiences. And, you know, golf is a bit like a book, you know, where you're not totally sure what you'll find in the next sentence or next page or chapter. But, you know, within what you're reading, you find these gems that stay with you, particularly in a good book. So it doesn't have to be about filtering millions of people talking about, you know, things that are just well beyond the human, capacity to filter these things. You know, I mean, it's unfathomable to think about how, like, Facebook and Twitter are boasting millions and millions and millions of people. And that's great because there's a lot of opportunities. But where I'm wanting to head is, you know, to create this environment where you can actually travel to Hawaii and someone will lend you their golf clubs. So we're yep. building right now a system where we can sort of match people, not exactly like a, you know, like a dating system, but you can search for things that involve business and, you know, what I'm willing to offer, what I'm willing to provide, for people who are traveling or on a business trip or vacation. And I've really had some fantastic experiences with our members because coming from LinkedIn, which has its own, it's its own business, but it has its own high-quality verification system. So, you know, if I'm sitting in an airport in Portugal and I, try to connect with a member and say, hey, can I borrow some clubs? Someone's going to send the police if I was just like a golf magazine
right.
subscriber. But in my environment, it seems like people are very receptive because they're verifiable. It's a trust-based network. And that's something
right.
that I think a lot of people are really enjoying at the moment. You know, I've not seen any Craigslist,
well,
criminal activity or anything like that.
Well, the thing is, really, what you're building is a community, in a sense, of really like-minded individuals who obviously all have a passion for golf and want to bring something to obviously benefit the group. It's not just a lot of chatter. There's a lot of other things going on behind the scenes, and that's, I'm sure, a lot of why the group has become so successful and has grown so rapidly. And but at the same time, you're sort of growing it with kit, or at least you were earlier in time, growing it with kit gloves. In other words, you were being very careful because there's a lot of groups out there on Facebook and so forth. But again, as I mentioned earlier, it's a lot of the same chatter, and there's really sometimes a lot of the better information, if you will, or the better communications get lost in the shuffle. So, you know, to be able to know that what you're doing is, you know, you're building a of like-minded golfers, if you will, or golf enthusiasts, but that have something unique to share with one another, and be able to do things as you just indicated. You know, if you're traveling and be able to assist in accommodations and assist in maybe connecting for a round or something like that. There's a lot of components that you're offering with Linked Golfers, and there's certain comfort level, if you will, by sort of being a member of that group.
Yeah, oh, no question. And, you know, I like to describe it, and anyone that wants to call in and give me a better a better way of describing it, I'd welcome it. But imagine yourself in a hot air balloon or something overlooking Manhattan and seeing all the cab drivers going every which way. Well, that's one way of looking at how a large mass media message might be distributed. You don't know anything about who's riding in the cab or where the cab's going or anything like that, but you're getting a lot of people. Now, when you're looking at a place like, let's say, Flushing Meadows, where they have a U.S. Tennis Open, you've got actually a group of people in one auditorium that are all, you know, tennis fans, and they're all in one area. In fact, actually, Flushing has maybe 4,000 less members in that environment. I like to look at it in one, you know, like to visualize it, our members, as if they're in one space, because it really helps me to identify like how many thrilling people there are, and you know how many people who are identifying with one another. But if you're confining people to that type of Flushing Meadows arena or area, then you can see like you already have eliminated a lot of problems with miscommunication or, you know, incompatibility and that sort of thing. In the case of LinkedIn, again, we've got this verification process that's not my job. It's just native from, you know, LinkedIn system. And we have, you know, business people who have, you know, have long careers, who are endorsed, who have, you know. So mainly we have a lot of senior executives who are really interested in networking or simply sharing around, and in some cases both. You know, it's their only time to play is, you know, they're busy people, and the only time they have really to network and golf is, you know, in a single afternoon. So it's exciting, and I think we're all a little confused in the golf industry right now, but we're all working toward it, which makes it especially exciting for me. You know, to see how people are attempting to solve the problems, you know?
Right, exactly. Now, you're obviously bringing the Link golfers out. I mean, you're obviously still going to maintain the group within LinkedIn, but you're also bringing it outside in your own format, if you will. Talk a little bit about that and when we can expect to see that in fruition.
Well, I think it's going to be maybe 2 weeks or so, and the system, basically I've designed the system so that everyone who joins can join with their existing account on LinkedIn, and that imports a lot of their account information if they'd like, you know, of course, if they want to do that. We don't use it for any, you know, we don't sell their information or anything like that, but what we're trying to accomplish is we're trying to kind of match people so that they can create an environment that gives them advantages as well as like a more entertaining experience. So they can upload their own course reviews. They can show pictures of places they've recently visited. I mean, this could be restaurants, hotels. I mean, you know, we're looking for, you know, golf is a lifestyle. It's not just all on-course experience, but it's the whole environment. So when you're taking a weekend trip, it's not just the round, which is fantastic, but you also want to have some advice about where you're dining and, you know, whether there are interesting things to see after the round or, you know, if your non-golfing partner has, you know, specific interests, then whether those things are available. So, you know, I'm focusing a lot on that and also on some really interesting, unique competition formats and some leaderboards that I don't think anyone's seen before. So I don't want to reveal a whole lot yet, but we're really getting close.
Right.
You know, let's say two, 3 weeks, something like that.
Excellent. And obviously, once you're ready to have your official launch, by all means, I know you're going to let me know, and we're going to make sure that we start talking about it here on the program, because we want people to get out there and see it. And I really like what it is that you're doing, because I think that there's a lot of great people in the industry out there that can come together, and it's not, you know, just a social chatting format. There's a lot of business that's being exchanged and a lot of ideas that are being exchanged. And it's really, as I said, a community, I think, is really what you're trying to build, a lot of different formats. I mean, you've spoken to me a number of times about, utilizing the program, within the community and that, and obviously being able to share that with some of the members and so forth, and obviously bringing some of the members on the program at future dates to share what they have to do. And I think there's just really what you're doing with Linked Golfers now is by moving some components, if you will, outside of LinkedIn, is you're allowing, as you said earlier in your segment, LinkedIn has certain restrictions as far as video and so forth. You're really allowing a lot of the other mediums out there, if you will, to be fully utilized by some of its members program, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No question. And, I really want to make sure that, the message is clear that this is not a sort of prescripted or entirely prescripted. I mean, I need to provide a framework that makes sense financially and, how much the technology costs and, details like that, that really aren't that interesting. But, once the framework is there, then I think everyone has something to offer. There might be a lot of listeners that you have here tonight that are writers or photographers or have technology skills or entrepreneurial idea or a property for sale. And, each one of these people are already in my group in one way or another on LinkedIn. But, I think what I'm trying to build outside or independent from LinkedIn is an environment that's more flexible and, allows a little bit more of a rich content experience. So, nothing against LinkedIn. I mean, it's a phenomenal system, but it's also, it's phenomenal for what it does, but it's really not that different than the 1980s, they're capitalizing on a really, really strong idea that's very long lasting. And, I look forward to working with them in the future. But I also look forward to seeing what our members come up with, because I know a lot of it won't be anything that I ever thought of.
Right, exactly. And it's like anything, we have to continue to evolve, if you will, in what we do. And the industry, the golf industry, of course, has to evolve. And you're doing, a great job to help do that with Linked Golfers. And we certainly appreciate that. Boy, Sean, I'll tell you, I don't know where the time goes, but it's flying by here so fast. We've just got a few moments left. So I know you're going to keep us updated with Linked Golfers when it's fully available outside of LinkedIn. But in the meantime, obviously, you certainly want to encourage people to join the group and add to the experience. They can obviously do that within LinkedIn if they're not already a member now. But what are some of the other things that you're going to be working on or you hope to have working with through Linked Golfers in the future?
One of the things that I'm working on relates to something I mentioned earlier, and it's a phenomenon that a lot of people, I'm surprised, haven't heard of, but it's the Hickory Golf phenomenon, and there are, hundreds of thousands of people that are actually playing golf around the world using clubs that were designed before 1935. And there's a second group that plays clubs that were designed before 1900. And the way the whole thing works, it's sort of a social media gathering, but the way it works is the clubs and courses that these places or these players gather around actually create the environments that were very much like the way Hickory, players played around the turn of the century. Turn of the 20th century or before. So it's one of the only environments where people can actually compare their scores against the raw talent of, golf's legends, Tom Morris, Bobby Jones,
right.
So it's a very interesting format. And so I'm getting involved with that. And one of the side effects of this, I'm working with some partners and we're trying to kind of consolidate the league so that each of these satellite groups kind of have an exciting way to compare with one another as well. But one of the side effects that I've realized is related to modern golf, and that is that playing with these Hickory clubs actually really strongly improves your modern game. because they're so wobbly and, you know, the flex is so different that you have to have a very slow, smooth, methodical swing. So if you can actually play with the hickory clubs, then your modern game is going to improve like crazy. I'm already seeing benefits to that. And, you know, no, I can't record my handicap. No, I'm not keeping score the same way other people do, but I'm learning a lot. And, you know, I expect when I, you know, recover from my current injury that, you know, I'm going to have a quite a different game for my patients, you know. Ted, are you there?
Yeah.
I don't know if you dropped off there.
A bit of a technical problem. Yeah, we might be having a little bit of technical problem. Sean, I want to take this opportunity to thank you for coming on. I think we're going to end on a good note there, and I appreciate you coming on. And I know that you're going to be coming back in the future to some stuff. And I know that when you go over to Scotland and that for this Hickory tournament, that you're going to try and gather some interviews and whatnot that we may play on the program here at a future. And I just updated with, I want to bring on Golfton for sharing to golfers. And I know, as I said, you're going to come back many times in the future to talk about different things that are going on and keep us updated. So I appreciate you spending some time with us this evening.
Well, I appreciate you having me and anytime.
All right. Well, Sean, again, thank you very much for coming on Golf Talk Live, and I hope that you're out there and enjoying, and most importantly, I hope you're having fun, and I appreciate, as always, your thoughts and inputs and into the program, and I look forward to working with you much more in the future.
Thank you very much, Ted, and tell Scott, you know, PO Light's not all that bad.
Yeah. I will do that.
Okay.
All right, Sean.
All right.
I will talk
to
you soon. Have a great great evening and a great weekend. Thank you very much. Okay. Just have a moment or left. That was, of course, my guest this evening was Sean Kelly. He is the owner and director of Linked Golfers. And as he said, he's just putting the final touches on his social media program, if you will, outside of LinkedIn, but currently still on LinkedIn with the group. And as I mentioned earlier, they have over 30,000 members from around the world and some very, very high profile, very prominent members as well. Certainly glad to be a part of that group. And we appreciate Sean coming on the program and sharing some of that with us and talking a little bit about the state of the golf industry. And as I said, we'll keep you updated in future. But I just want to take this opportunity to thank all of the listeners worldwide for faithfully tuning into Golf Talk Live each week. And I certainly have the pleasure and enjoyment of having a number of highly qualified instructors and players and so forth on the program. And I just want to thank you for helping to make Golf Talk Live a first-class show, and apologize for a little bit of the technical problems here at the end, but also want to thank some of the sponsors of the show, Jonathan Laird from SuckGuide, and of course, you can get Jonathan at www.southcoastguide.com, and particularly Jonathan at South Coast Guide. In his publication. It features a lot of great courses in the eastern part of the United States, from Mississippi to the Gulf Coast and Florida. And you can certainly get him at that email address. Also, Mr. Bernie Pinder of Ontic Golf. Thank you, Bernie, for all your continued support. And Nikki and Tiffany Litherland for all your support of the program. And, of course, Meredith Kirk, who is the 2014 Mrs. South Carolina. She's going to be competing here, I think, any day now, actually, in the Mrs. USA competition. So good luck, Meredith. Thank you for your support and for Meredith Kirk Golf and also her publication, Endless Golf, a Myrtle Beach magazine, for all of your support as well. And Mr. Peter Doyle from over in Ireland, appreciate you supporting the. And, of course, Peter, a master club maker and also a teaching professional as well over in Ireland. Thank you for keeping us tuned in over there in Ireland. Thanks, Peter. Anyways, I want everybody to have a great weekend, and thank you. We will see you next Thursday at 6 p.m. Central right here on Golf Talk Live. Thanks. Having a great weekend, everybody, and God bless.